And welcome to the Sure IDC podcast, the show about anything and everything. This is Lucas, and let's see what topic we can get into today. We talk about movies, songs, video games, board games, food, books, personality traits, animals, history, anything and everything you can think of. So sit back, relax, because we are just here to have a good time. The mastery and uniqueness of sharing a story. To tell the highs and the lows, the ups and downs, to draw someone in and keep them entranced in the story. It is truly a skill to be a storyteller. Today, we are talking about storytelling, and to join me in this conversation is a good friend of mine, and that is Josh. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Lucas. I'm excited to be on here with you.
Well, thanks for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
I was thinking about this earlier today, knowing that we were going to be having this conversation, just how funny it is how we met. You know, it's been 5 years ago, I think, doing a stage production together. It was my first show in 18 years, and you were a college kid. And it was actually through that process that I thought, man, I really love this age group. And now here I am working at the college.
Yeah. That was one of my favorite shows.
It was great.
Yeah. It was a fantastic show. Meet Me in St. Louis. And just one of the parts that I loved about that show is just the family dynamic that we had. Mm. And by family dynamic, I mean like the people who were casted as the family.
Right.
So, I mean, I was the dad. You were the grandpa in the story, and even your daughter was in it, and
yep,
and it was just
that was her first show, and she just fell in love with theater after that, and she's done a ton of stuff since then.
Yeah, the acting bug, that's what they call it, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm so glad that that show happened, and I'm so glad that everything, I met the people who I met, because that's just, it's a great connection there. So, yep. Yeah, I mean, and that's amazing that you found your kind of passion for, teaching and stuff like that, which we can get into, which is a great segue to how I want to start the conversation. Tell us a little bit about your history in theater or storytelling or, you know, whatever you want to talk about.
All right. Well, I've been a storyteller all my life. I just didn't realize it till the last few years, but, I remember as a little kid, I was such a big fan of professional wrestling back in the 80s. And I had this tape recorder, and I would hit record, and then I would start calling play by play of mm-hmm. these wrestling matches that were in my head. You know, I would create my own wrestlers, give them goofy names, and I would just call out these matches in my head that weren't really happening anywhere, you know, never would happen. But that was kind of one of my earliest attempts at telling stories. I also used to write my own comic books in fifth grade. Created my own superheroes, and then just as I grew up, just more and more of that kind of thing. Got into college and found the theater, which was a bunch of weirdos who I fit in with great. And we started telling stories on the stage. And then through that, I started dabbling in video and writing sketch comedy stuff. And we had our own website, chroniczing.com, for a lot of years, where we would just post goofy sketch comedy videos. And this was before the days of YouTube or anything. Wow. And then I went into professional videography, owned a business called Digital Lunchbox, which is still operating today. Did that with my best friend and college roommate, and we had some great clients. And then I learned how to tell stories for my clients through commercials and sales videos and all those types of things. Meanwhile, still dabbling with stage productions, mainly through churches and things like that. Mm-hmm. And then I left Digital Lunchbox, went into full-time ministry, and learned how to tell stories through sermons and tell stories through devotionals that I would write and things like that. And then ended up here at College of the Ozarks, where I oversee a radio station and get to mentor some great students. And now it's learning how to tell stories with no visuals, and which is all, and just a new way of telling stories. So
yeah,
just my whole life, I've had opportunities to tell stories, and just, I used to think, what do I have to offer? Like, the only thing I've got going for me is I just have this big imagination, but what's that ever going to do for me? And now I've realized it's served me very, very well all throughout my life.
That's awesome. That's awesome. The biggest question that I have right now is, are those comics still around from when you were 5 years old?
You know what? I think so. Yes. I think there's some in a box at my mom's house, but I need to start digging around and see if I can find them.
Now, is it one of those things where you like look at them and you're all like, wow, my spelling was atrocious? Or are you all like, oh my gosh, I was a genius?
Well, it's been a few decades since I've seen them. In my mind, they're outstanding. And so,
well, you know, there's always that moment when you grow up and you look back at some papers, you know, some stories that you wrote in school as a kid, and you're thinking, wow, this is bad.
Right. Oh, I'm sure if I were to actually find that box of comics and stuff right now, I'd be like, yeah, this really doesn't need to see the light of day.
You're like, I know
my mind, they're wonderful.
So. Oh, of course. But I know for me, I'm like spelling words wrong and spelling words backwards and stuff. And I'm all like, wow, you were a special kid, Lucas, weren't you? I'm glad you grew out of that. No, no, I'm still weird. That's awesome. I mean, that's awesome that you were, that you were kind of like sharing stories your entire life. You didn't quite know it, but you still were. You still learn from that. You still learn things and grow. And then when you can start to be like, oh yeah, I have been doing that. Now, how have I been doing it? You know, learning the understanding of what's the best way to do it, stuff like that.
Well, and I remember when I first started preaching, and I remember my very first sermon. I'm standing on stage and I'm saying something, like stuff's coming out of my mouth, but my mind is looking at a few of these guys out there that I know really well. And I'm thinking, what in the world do I have to offer them? They're older, they're wiser. And here I'm supposed to be able to inspire them or teach them. Like, what do I have to offer? And so I had a conversation with a friend of mine a few days later, and I was just telling him about that self-doubt and everything that I was wrestling with. And he told me, he said, well, you don't have to know everything. You just have to know what you're learning and share that. And when he told me that, I was like, oh, well, that simplifies this whole process. And so I would just think about, okay, what am I learning? What are the things I'm studying? And I was learning a ton at the time because I was terrified of getting it wrong. So I studied my face off. Yeah. And then I realized that the best way for me to communicate is just, let's tell stories. Like, I'm not a great lecturer, but I can tell a story.
Yeah. Well, there is something to what you said, you know, why when you're sharing a story or when you're sharing information or when you're lecturing or whatever, you know, I wonder how many people actually think in their mind, who am I, you know, to share this information, you know, who am I to, you know, share the wisdom, the knowledge that I have. I sure hope that everyone in that light or in that venue has that moment.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that's a very important moment to have. I don't know, maybe because it keeps you humble. I don't know, but that is an interesting thought.
Well, it keeps you humble, and it also keeps you realistic. And so where you're not out there peddling some garbage you wrote thinking that it's fantastic, you know, instead you're like, okay, it's still not quite there. You know, it's a little bit of, not self-doubt. Self-doubt's not necessarily good, but just that ability to be honest with yourself and say, okay, it still needs some work. And like, for instance, I, I wrote a play. I started it in the summer of 2021, and I just put the finishing touches on it about a week ago. I went through five different drafts of it just because I knew it. It just still needed a little bit of work. It needed some tweaking. It needed some loose ends tied up. And now, being patient with it and just giving it room to breathe, and sometimes just setting it down for a month and then coming back to it. Now I'm like, it's something I'm very proud of, and I'm excited to hopefully see produced at some point.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. Well, let's get into it, since you've already kind of hinted at what you've been up to. But I want to start by, asking just a very simple question. Everything's simple. But what is the most, I guess, in your opinion, what is the most important part of starting a story?
Oh, I think for me, it's like, what I need to know, what am I wanting the audience to take away from this? Like, mm-hmm. I don't even have to know what the story itself is. I just need to know, what is this something that I want to inspire them? Is it something I want them? Is there a certain subject matter that I need them to think about? I can get to that later, but I feel like Jesus was a great example of this, because people would ask him a question, say, "Hey, Jesus, what do you think about blah, 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 blah?" And instead of answering it, he would just tell them a story, mm-hmm. so that at the end of that story, they knew exactly what he thought. And in a way, they knew probably what they should be thinking as well, you know? I think that storytelling is just such a strong and impactful way to communicate. So I think for me, it's not so much the story, it's not the characters, it's not, I don't even need to know the ending before I can start writing. I just kind of need to know, okay, what am I trying to achieve with this?
Yeah. Yeah. You have to know, what is the meaning of your story? What's the meaning? What's the purpose of you sharing the story, I guess?
And sometimes it's purely for entertainment. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's, I just want to make somebody laugh, you know? But then other times there's a little more meat and potatoes that you want to share.
Yeah. But even in those situations, you know, those of the purpose of the show or whatever, just being entertainment, isn't there also some form, some other meaning out there that's more than just entertainment purposes? But like, I don't know, like it's kind of hard to explain.
No, I get what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you can make that argument, especially if you're talking long form, like a screenplay or a stage play or something like that. I think if you get away from sketch comedy sometimes is just for nonsense sake, you know?
Yeah.
I think you're probably right in that, but I will say and I don't mean to sound like I'm contradicting myself, but there are times where I've sat down and I just started writing, no idea where I was going, no idea what I was wanting to say. I just started writing. Or like with this play that I just finished, it's called Of Prophets and Fools. And I actually sat down thinking I was writing a comedy. And then I got to the end of it and I realized, oh shoot, I just wrote a tragedy.
Oh no.
But it's a tragedy that I love, and it's got some lighthearted elements in it, you know, and it's actually, it's something that, it's got a lot of my personality in it, but the storyline itself ends up kind of a tragic tale.
Yeah. Well, I guess you mentioned it several, already, and you just kind of highlighted it again. But when it comes to just story development, this is something that I specifically want to ask, and you already kind of answered it, but I kind of want to talk about it a little bit, kind of elaborate more on it. But with story development, you know, I feel like a lot of writers, including myself, we feel like that's the type of thing we just have to sit down and write, which of course that's what you have to do. But then I think a lot of writers, they begin to say, well, I have to know the ending. I have to know the ending, or else how am I going to get there? And you already said that you don't have to know the ending to start, but do you have to have an understanding or a know when the ending of your story is going to be, or not when, but like what it's going to be?
No, I don't believe so. Not to start. I've written several things, whether it's a short story or a one-act play, or even this most recent play that I've written, where I start writing, and after you kind of push through the first couple of chapters or so, it almost feels like the story is writing itself. Mm-hmm. And like, I just need to know what the next step is. At some point though, about 2/3 of the way, you should have an understanding of where you're going to end, but you don't have to know that up front. Actually, I love it when I don't. Like, I love the, there's an adventure in writing. When you just start, it's like, okay, I'm taking off and I really don't know where I'm going to end up. And that's kind of, there's something exciting in that, feels a little adventurous. And then all of a sudden it dawns on you. And I love the aha moment where all of a sudden, like, oh my gosh, this is how the story is going to end. You know, like, yeah. And it's almost like I've gotten to enjoy the story, you know, myself, even though I'm the one writing it.
Yeah. Even when it turns your comedy into a tragedy.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like all the, so I guess there's no, and you know, you always think of movies, like movie boards and stuff like that. They know exactly what's going to happen at every single moment. They know, they may not, I mean, they may be open for suggestions and how things will end, you know, maybe like changes and stuff. Yeah. But usually when they sit down, they go through the entire story, start to finish. This is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I guess that's one way of doing it. But it's not the correct way of doing it.
So I go back to like the days when I owned my business, and I was pitching scripts to clients and stuff. And sometimes scripts were just really basic, just information that they need to get out to their customers. But sometimes, especially like some of our clients, like the Springfield Symphony and stuff, they allowed us to get really creative with some of the stuff. And we got to kind of create these stories for them. Now, if I'm doing that for a client, or if I'm trying to sell something, then I kind of need to know where it's going to go and where it's going to land before I can try to sell it, you know? So that's one thing. Like if you're going to go pitch a script to potential producers or something, mm-hmm. and the script's not quite written yet, you better know where it's going before you start pitching.
You walk into the producer meeting and you go, I have this script. There's no ending. But there yep. will be.
I have no idea where it's going, but it's going to be awesome.
That would be definitely a pitch meeting for sure.
Oh yeah.
It's like, wait, you don't have the ending? Not yet, but it's going to be awesome. Anyway, sorry to interrupt. You were on a roll.
No, that's fine. Like, but had I done something like that to one of my clients?
Yeah.
Hey, we've got this idea. We really don't know where it's going, but just trust us on this. It's going to be great. You know, they would think I was crazy and I'd get kicked out of the room and they'd find someone else. But if you're just writing, like I don't really write anything with the idea of selling it. I'm just trying to tell stories. And then when I'm at the end, if it's good enough, I think, oh, maybe I'll get that published or something like that, you know? But because I'm writing primarily for myself, I don't have to know that stuff. I can just write.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess that's the beauty of it. You can just write to write with no pressure of it. You know, it's always like those trilogies, or not the trilogies, but like the novels where there's multiple books in the series and the publisher is always like, okay, make the book. Come on, you know, writer's block. And you know, you hear movies of that or television shows and stuff, all the pressure that they have. It's like, you can just write to write. It's like no pressure.
Yeah.
So
I'm writing a screenplay. I'm about 70 pages in. Mm-hmm. And as I've gotten into it, I've realized, okay, this is definitely a one-off story. Like there's no way to create a sequel or anything like that, which in a sense can be a relief, because if it were to sell and if it were to gain any kind of notoriety at all, and you've got some sort of company breathing down your neck with a with a deadline to write the sequel, you know, like then you're under a lot of pressure, and that's why a lot of sequels tank, you know.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the paycheck would be nice. So, so what's more important, right? Paycheck or the art? I don't know.
Depends on the situation that you're in.
That's right. Yeah.
You mentioned before we started recording that there are elements of sharing a story that you would like to talk about. Let's kind of dive into that now. Share with us a little bit of what your elements are of sharing a story.
Oh, I think like whether you are communicating verbally, like whether you're just telling stories to your kids, or whether you're preaching a sermon, or whatever, lecturing a class, and you're using story, whether you're doing that verbally, whether you're putting something on paper, whether in a novel or on a stage play or a screenplay, there's some things that they're just good across the board. For me, like I felt like this with my sermons, and I feel like this with the stuff I'm writing now. If I don't completely buy into where I'm going, if I don't feel like I'm on a good track, or I'm maybe not on the best track, then it's going to be hard for you, the audience, to buy into what I'm trying to communicate. Like I feel like to be a good storyteller, you've got to buy into what it is you're trying to communicate. I couldn't tell a story that I don't like. I couldn't tell it well. You know, if somebody gave me a story and it's garbage and they're like, "Hey, can you put this into a screenplay?" I could try, but if it's a stupid story that I just don't click with, I mean, it's not going to captivate anybody. If it doesn't captivate me, it's not going to captivate the audience.
Yeah.
So I think that's an important thing, is if your story doesn't captivate you, then find a different story. Unless you're getting paid a lot of money and you need the paycheck, then just push your way through it and
pretend. And just write it.
Pretend you like it. So,
yeah.
I think that's a big thing. I think when you're talking about stories that include characters, for me, I really need to be able to visualize my characters. Like if they're just a name on a page, it's really hard for me to give them an original or a unique identity or a unique sound in the way that they speak, in the way that they the types of words that they choose to communicate with. You know, it's hard for me to give them any kind of unique personality traits or anything if I can't visualize them. Like I need to have a picture of what they physically look like, how they move, like. So when I'm writing my own stuff, like I can see that character in my head.
Yeah. Now you don't go as far as like, you know, making someone draw them for you.
No. However, I used to write a lot of like multi-part plays for like children's ministries and stuff, where it'd be like six parts. So it might be like a Vacation Bible School, and each day there's a different part of this play that's played out, and finally it comes to a conclusion on the very last day of the week or whatever. When I would do stuff like that, it was more for my actors than for my own purpose, but I would find visuals online of a character that is similar to what I'm picturing in my head, and then I would, with their script, I would give them a picture of this is kind of the character I'm thinking of. And that helps them to visualize maybe where I'm going. Now, you can argue that takes a lot of the creativity out of it for the actor. If you're telling them what the character should look and act like, but at the same time, when you're working with children's ministry, you're not really working with actors. You're working with parents who are volunteering, you know, so anything you can give them to help them out. I can see my characters as clear as day. I can hear their voices in my head, which makes me sound a little bit like a crazy person.
But
for me, that's an important part of the process.
Yeah.
Even small smaller roles, you know, a character who may not have more than a half dozen lines in a full length screenplay or stage production or something. Like, I can still see them. And then when I come back to that script 3-4 months later, I pick right back up where I left off. I can still see them. I can still hear them.
Yeah. That's just making me think of like animation.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it really is. And I, you know, it's interesting being able to see the character and be the character, not really be the character, but you know, be just like you mentioned, being able to see that character and understand what that character is going through, is of course a massive part of it. But that is interesting that, you know, I bet there are some people that do have to have that, you know, have a person draw the character, and, you know, have them animated in some sense to just get an idea of what that character does.
Yeah. And the other thing I would preface all this with is I'm just communicating how I operate, but I'm certain, as in any art form, there's a million different ways to approach, you know, storytelling. This is just what works for me and the way that my mind works. But yeah, I'm sure there's lots of other ways to do it.
Have you ever thought of doing an animation?
Actually, when I had Digital Lunchbox, we did a few animated projects. I don't know if you've ever seen the, like in the downtown Branson area, there's this cartoon trolley that's on some different signs and billboards and stuff like that.
Okay.
We were hired by the Downtown Branson Association to create this this animated character for them that would promote their new trolley system that they put in place back several years ago.
Okay, yeah.
And I worked with our animator that we had at the time, a brilliant guy named Jesse Christofferson, and we kind of created a look for him, and I kind of knew what in my head what he sounded like. So I started getting on these websites looking for voiceover artists that sounded similar to what I was hearing in my head. And we found this guy named Bruce Bailey Johnson, who actually used to voice back in the like 90s, voice these Lever 2000 commercials. And he just had a great, rich voice for this little trolley character. So I've done a little animation in that world, but I've never really written for animation as far as like for like an animated film or anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess we already are on this topic, and I do have that, you know, question to ask, but you know, we kind of talked about it a little bit, but how do you build a character and character development? Like, how is that? I mean, because that's a major part of your story. It drives your story. It's your characters that drive your story. So what is important to you about building a character? And then of course their development through the story.
Well, I think I keep referencing the play that I just finished up, mainly because it's fresh in my mind again.
Of course. Yeah.
But, the main character in that is a young man named Horace, who, He grew up with this severe stutter. Takes place in the 1870s. Okay. He's got a really bad stutter, and therefore he's got a very overprotective mother who wants to protect him from any kind of embarrassment. So she does all of his talking and everything for him. And now he's a 22-year-old man who's still treated like a 9-year-old child. And so once, if I can picture him and what his demeanor is and how he speaks and how he, like, his posture, like a guy like that is probably going to look at the ground a lot, you know, just things like that. And I can picture all these things, and I can hear how he speaks. Once I can kind of get a grasp on how does someone in those circumstances, how does he operate, then I see all of the rest of the characters, because he's my protagonist. So now I see all the rest of the characters through his lens. And so knowing my protagonist greatly influences the way that my other characters look, because now I'm needing to create conflict, mm-hmm. and sometimes I need to create romance, and sometimes I need to create other things like that. And so how do I create that conflict? What is going to conflict with Horace and his personality? What is going to create that sense of romance with Horace? And so now that I know him inside and out, that kind of drives the ship when it comes to developing all the rest of the characters.
Yeah. Yeah. Now the biggest question that I have as right now in this moment, mm-hmm. is what's your process of picking a character's name? Well, that's always the hardest for me.
This might sound weird, but I actually have like different notebooks where I just have names. Like a name just pops in my head, or maybe I hear a name somewhere, or I might read something and I'm like, oh, that's kind of a cool name. I'm going to take a note of that. And so I might put it in my phone, or I might jot it down in one of these notebooks, or, but it really depends. If I'm doing a comedy, I'm going to come up with, if I'm doing like a children's comedy, I'm going to use a certain type of name that I might not use if I'm doing like a tragedy, of course.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And so, and then like, the story of Prophets and Fools, it takes place in the 1870s. And so I did a ton of research on what names were popular. I searched like the 1840s and 50s. What were the most popular, some of the most popular names, because mm-hmm. my characters for the most part are in their 20s, 20s and older. So, I did a lot of that. I read articles, like newspaper articles from back then, because there are some significant historical things that happened that I worked into the play.
Yeah.
And when reading those articles, different names and stuff will pop up and you're like, oh man, that's just a great name for a character.
Yeah. Well, I love that. I love what you're talking about right now, that aspect of it. Yeah. Actually doing research about certain time periods, or how things were written back then, or how things were done back then. How important do you think that is in writing anything?
In writing anything, I would say 90% of the stuff that I write, I have to do some significant research.
I just feel like it makes it so much better. Like there's just more meat to it.
Well, it gives it some reality, and it gives mm-hmm. it, I don't know, it just feels right. I don't know how else to say it, but like, so this story, our main character, Horace, he's in the first few pages, he's in a terrible accident, and he wakes up 3 days later at his own funeral. And he announces to everybody in attendance that he has a message from God, that the world is coming to an end. And so, the rest of the story is him traveling and trying to communicate this message, before he knows that a specific date, September 22nd, 1874. So he's got about 4.5 years to travel and just share this message that God gave him, that the world's coming to an end.
And, now, is this a true message or a fake message, or are we going to know?
So this part is just a story that I made up. This was back when I still thought I was writing a comedy.
it's deep already.
When I started researching, then this is the crazy part. When I started researching the 1870s, mm-hmm. and I knew I wanted him to have a few years of traveling around and meeting with people and stuff. And so I started researching the early 1870s. And so in 1873, there was an event that's called the Long Depression, which was pretty much what it was the ramifications of the Civil War. So the Civil War's been over with for about 9 years or something.
9 years, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now finally the expense of it is really hitting the country. And like there's this huge, it was actually called the Great Depression for a while, until what we know now as the Great Depression came along. And then they started referring it to it as the Long Depression of 1873. And so I thought, well, that's great. Like I'll work that into the story. And then as he's telling people about the end of time, and they're dealing with all this suffering,
yeah,
they're gonna it's gonna be more believable to them to hear his story because of what they're experiencing. I researched a little further, found out the very next year in 1874, there's what's called the locust plague of 1874, where it's this bizarre thing that happens every like 100, 200 years, I don't remember now, where these locusts just hatched like crazy and they completely destroyed the whole Midwest. There were writings, articles in newspapers where people would report that they, as the locusts came through, they would eat the wool right off the backs of the sheep. They would eat the clothes that was just hanging on clotheslines, so where there was nothing left in a matter of seconds. There's so many locusts coming through, it sounded like a train coming through. They would eat the wooden handles off of their tools and like all this crazy stuff. And so I incorporate that into my story as well. So now it really does feel like a biblical plague. The end of times is really here. And so it just, and that wasn't stuff that I knew in advance when I started my story, but it just worked so perfectly that I couldn't not incorporate that stuff.
Yeah, I love that. That is fantastic. I mean, not that that actually happened because that's horrible, but but I love that. Every time I've tried to write something like that where I really kind of get into the research heavy stuff. Mm-hmm. And I love it. I love that type of writing. And you don't have to do it, but if you're writing a historical piece and you want to know, you know, what was their names back then? What did they say back then? You know, stuff like that. You really learn about history without even trying.
Yeah.
So if you're able to incorporate those things into your show or into your story and make them just kind of elevated even to an extent that you didn't know, it's just golden. I love it.
Well, and there's sometimes where research will save you from making a big mistake. There was a quote from T.S. Eliot that I had found a long time ago when I was first starting to work on this story that I really wanted to incorporate. I have a character who's kind of the traveling companion of Horace, and he also serves as a narrator to the audience. And there was this quote by T.S. Eliot that I really wanted him to just step out and state towards the end when we realized that the world really isn't coming to an end.
Yeah. Spoilers. And, no, just kidding.
Oh, shoot. but the quote is, it's from a long poem that he wrote, and I can't remember the name of it, but the quote I wanted to use was, "This is the way the world ends. This is the way the world ends. This is the way the world ends. Not with a bang, but a whimper." And I thought, oh, that fits the story so well. And so I wrote it in. And then, like, I don't know, 6 months after writing it in, I was like, wait a second.
Hang on a second. Yeah.
When was T.S. Eliot alive? Mm-hmm. So I looked it up, and he wasn't born until 20 years after.
And no! So
gotta cut it. As much as I loved it and as much as it fit, I just, it wouldn't be right to leave it in. So I had to cut it.
Yeah. Well, oh yeah, gosh, that's just heartbreaking.
Yeah. And it was hard for me to, like, I knew I needed to cut it. I knew I had to cut it.
Yeah.
But it took me a long time to actually cut it.
Yeah. Cause you liked it so much.
I just liked it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. I love that. I love that.
But my research saved my butt there, because somebody would have called me out on it at some point.
Yeah. They would have been like, you know, that T.S. Eliot wasn't born until 20 years later. And you'd have been all like, crap.
right.
You're like, oh, I didn't know that. Yeah, well, that's funny. That's awesome. I love that. I think that research really does help with a story. That's great. I love that. We kind of got sidetracked a little bit from you sharing elements. Were there any other elements that you were wanting to share before we kind of, like, any other important ones before we kind of sidestepped into character development and such?
Oh, I'm sure there are. I'm just trying to think. a really smart person would have like 20 more of them to list right now.
No, that's okay. Okay. I just didn't want to, interrupt if you were going to say something, else,
there are other things that I would like to share. I just can't think of them
at the moment. Well, if you do think of them, then just interrupt and say, oh, this is a good one. But, okay. I guess, so we've talked about, you know, what is the most important part of, you know, of starting a story, you know, what do you have to know, like the meaning, or the understanding or the knowing of the show? What do you want to portray, or I guess the purpose, I guess, what's the purpose of the show? We've kind of talked about, how to keep a story going with character development and character progression. But I guess we haven't really mentioned it, but in your opinion, and I think this is the really big thing, because you can have the purpose, you can have the characters, you can have the whatever, you know, that we've been talking about for the last 40 minutes, but what is the best way to start? You know, how do you start a story? And, you know, I think that's one of the big things that stops people from actually starting their story, because they don't know how to start. So, yeah. You know, how is it done? How can you do that?
I've started lots of different ways. Sometimes I've started because I had a title. You know, and that's all I had.
Yeah.
I just sit down, I just start writing and see. Like, I wrote a one act play. This is many years ago. And I had this title that I really wasn't even crazy about, but I couldn't shake it. And it's called Pete Grisby's Problem with Cheese. And
Pete Grisby's Problem with Cheese.
Yeah. And so I sat down and just started writing it one day. And then it turned out that. It was actually a story about a teenage kid, a high school kid who's dying of leukemia. You wouldn't guess that from the title, would you?
Definitely not. Did you keep that title for it?
I did. Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
And the title actually worked really well, because what it was we, for most of the play, we're living inside Pete's imagination as he's, struggling to come to terms with what he's actually dealing with. And so he distracts himself with all these characters that he's dreamed up. And there's this superhero that keeps showing up called Captain Courage. And every time Pete starts to talk about, every time he starts to let the audience in on what's really going on, Captain Courage jumps in with some story about cheese. And so Captain Courage is just constantly distracting him from what's really happening in his life. And we interpret that as that's Pete trying to, he's keeping himself distracted so he doesn't really have to come to terms with what he's dealing with. And he does that through a superhero who continues to talk about cheese. So.
Well, that is amazing.
I've had a title and I just started writing. There's times where I've had a character that's just a fun character, and I'm like, oh, I really want to put him in a story. Or so I just start building a story around him. There's been times where I just had an assignment, you know, it's like somebody says, hey, we need a script for blah, blah, blah. And so I just sit down and just start creating. I don't know. It's kind of what came first, the chicken or the egg. And some days it's the chicken and some days sometimes it's the egg.
I'm going to kind of throw a curveball at you, because I just now thought of it. And I think it's a great question, a great topic of conversation, because I know I struggle with it when I write. But how do you get out of that mindset, or how do you walk around that mindset of, I guess, not being afraid, but worrying about it being original? You know, there's so much out there. There's so many stories out there. How do you get around that oh, that's too similar. Mm. You know, there's one thing about actually, you know, plagiarizing.
Right. Yes.
Copyrights. But thing. Like, yeah. But you know, you're like, oh, I would love my character to do this. And then you're all like, oh, wait, am I getting that from, you know, Lord of the Rings when Frodo, you know, like, right. You know what? Right. And how do you get out of that mindset? Like, is that a mindset that you should get out of? Is it wrong to, you know, because I feel like that stops me from writing. It's like, oh, well, if I can't figure out anything original, then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's only so much that can be original. Mm-hmm. And I think so many of the stories that we see are stories that have already been told. You just have to find a unique way to tell the story again. I think it's a kind of like walking a tightrope. You want to be aware, like you want to be self-aware so that you're not just plagiarizing, or that you're not just, oh, what if I had this teenage kid and he gets bit by a radioactive insect of some sort, and now he has these superpowers, you know, like,
yeah,
like you want to be aware enough that you're not just recreating something that somebody else has done, you know, and you got to be honest with yourself. But at the same time, the tightrope part is, at the same time, just let yourself write. Don't get in your head too much. Don't second guess it too much. Don't overthink it. Just if you, because it's easy to terrify yourself to the point where you never put a single thing down on paper.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to do that. You know, say you write a whole script and you get to the end of it and you think, oh, this is really similar to such and such. Okay, well, now you know. Now start making those adjustments to change it a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
But if you don't ever put it on paper, you're never going to be able to make the adjustments, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, don't overthink it. Don't scare yourself out of writing. Just, I mean, if you think you have a story to tell, just tell it, you know? And then on the back end, you know, get some people you trust to take a look at it. And if they all start saying, oh, you know what, this sounds really familiar, then you're like, okay, well, where can I go to work on it to start to differentiate it, to make it a little more mine?
Yeah I love that. That's great. Yeah, so you have kind of been, of course, this entire episode you've been kind of using what you know, what you've written, as examples for things, which is awesome. But is there anything that you want to share about what you've done, what you're currently working on, or anything? Is there anything that you want to share more about that stuff?
Sure. Yeah. And before I get to that, I did think of this earlier. Something I would highly recommend is don't throw any ideas out. Don't throw anything away. Even if you just have like a log line for something, just like, I have a folder of stuff, just ideas and stuff that I wrote when I was in college 25 years ago. And in fact, this play of Prophets and Fools, that started from a basic idea that I had in college about a guy who wakes up at his own funeral and thinks the world's coming to an end. Only the major difference there was it was a comedy, and he was going to travel, and his traveling companion was a three-legged cow. And then,
interesting.
I stumbled across that story about a year and a half ago, and I was like, yeah. What was I thinking? And then I'm actually working on my MFA in script and screenwriting. Mm-hmm. And so it was through an assignment that I had to start thinking about, okay, what would make a good play? And that story came to mind, and I just reworked it. So had I not read it, had I not stumbled across that piece of paper 6 months before, something that I'd written 25 years ago, I would have written the play. So don't throw anything away. Be a pack rat with your ideas.
Keep so. Folders or keep notebooks.
Yeah. Okay, so now I'm trying to remember what you just asked me before I...
What have you done?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You've kind of talked about what you've done, but is there any specific stuff that you want to mention?
Like I just mentioned, I'm working on my MFA in script and screenwriting through Regent University, which I've thoroughly loved. It's in some ways, I've always enjoyed writing and telling stories, but in some ways, it's it's accelerated that, it's enhanced that. You know, I've had some great classes and great professors. I'm getting ready to start a class this coming Monday. It's a class all about writing comedy. And my professor used to write for Scooby-Doo and used to write for Larry Boy and Dennis the Menace cartoons and all kinds of stuff. I had a professor a couple semesters ago who wrote for some pretty big shows in the 80s, like Hill Street Blues and Cheers and some different things like that. And so I get to learn from people who have actually had a lot of success in this world. And yeah, that's exciting for me. And they're very accessible. So I'm doing that. At the same time, like I mentioned a little bit ago, I have a screenplay that I'm about 70 pages in. I probably, and it is a comedy so far. it's a comedy.
So far.
Yeah. Well, there is a catch to that, though. It's a comedy about a guy who walks out on his wife and kids. But,
oh, my gosh. I love it. Oh my gosh!
Nothing funnier than that, right?
I think that you need to classify all your writings as tragedies, and maybe they'll turn into comedy. That is great. I love actually, that.
So far, it's funny, and I'm really happy with where it's going, and it's got a good ending.
That's fine.
At least I think it's going to have a good ending. But I've got about 50 pages left to go on that one.
Oh, wow.
And then let's see. I've got another play that I'm about I'm probably about 30 pages in on, and it's a murder mystery, kind of like in the vein of like a Clue or 10 Little Indians, nice. Something like that. But it's just kind of a silly murder mystery. I've got a couple of short film ideas that I'm just kind of sketching out the ideas for right now. Oh, I've been reading and listening to podcasts quite a bit about 10-minute plays. Mm-hmm. I guess that's a thing that's really caught on in the theater world in the last few years that I've just been completely unaware of. And so now I'm thinking, oh, I want to do that too. So I may start dabbling in those. So
that's awesome.
But my most recent play, I'm in the process of getting it copyrighted and hopefully getting it published before too long, and maybe even getting a couple of productions of it done here in the not too distant future. So
that's awesome. Well, keep me in mind.
yeah, absolutely.
No, that's awesome. That's, I mean, it sounds like you've got so many ideas, so many great ideas, so many. Just amazing formats. I mean, different formats, different stories, different ways to share stories. So that's awesome.
I still get opportunities to tell stories through sermons from time to time. And I'm not pastoring full time anymore. I haven't been for a few years, but I still get to do that on occasion. That's always fun and enjoyable. You know, teaching in the classroom, I'm finding that I really, really love that.
That's awesome.
So I'm hoping to continue doing that and maybe even more of that. And I'd like to get into where I'm teaching some storytelling type classes.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
That'd be so cool. Well, the last question that I want to ask before we wrap up is so we've been talking about stories this whole time. Do you have any like all-time favorite stories?
You know what? I've got such a wide range of interests when it comes to stories. And some of my favorite stories are really, really dumb. I love Zoolander.
Really? Okay.
It's ridiculous, but man, I love it. I love The Jerk with Steve Martin. Like one of my favorite comedies of all times is Some Like It Hot. Man, I can watch that every day. But then I also like I'm a real storyteller, and I have an appreciation for, you know, legit stuff as well, not just complete nonsense. Like Rear Window, one of my favorite movies ever. It tells such a good movie, such a good story through just little glances and stuff like that. Like it builds suspense without you really even seeing anything. It does such a nice job of that. Let's see, Truman Show. I'm not just a big fan of the movie, but man, that is some great storytelling.
I know, right?
Let's see. I just last week I watched Casablanca again with my daughter. She was wanting to watch it, and if you know, you asked me to watch Casablanca, I'm gonna say yes.
And you're like, yeah. Yeah. Don't ask me twice.
So, and then like with plays, like I love anything by like Jim Leonard Jr. Mm-hmm. He did like The Diviners and The Dance Real Slow in Jackson. Those are a couple of shows that I got to be a part of years ago, and he just has a masterful way of telling a heart-tugging story for the stage, and it's just he just beautiful playwright. Yeah, and then of course, like I'm a huge fan of Star Wars. That was my first love as a child, and had my dad not bought me a little hand axe when I was like 9 or 10 years old, I would probably still have all my action figures. And I'd be a very wealthy man. But nope, they all are buried in the dirt somewhere with no heads and arms. Indiana Jones, like I love that series, especially my favorite, which a lot of people. A lot of people with Indiana Jones, they love Raiders of the Lost Ark, which mm-hmm. I do. But for me, I love the father and son story in The Last Crusade.
Yes. Shameless plug. If you have not listened to the Indiana Jones episode, please do, because we have done an episode over Indiana Jones. So go back and check that out. All right. Shameless plug over. No, you'll hear all my thoughts on that episode.
But like there's something very interesting to me, and I think not just to me, I think to a lot of people, father and son stories. There's something about father and son stories that just really speak to people.
Yeah. I feel like you don't really see that anymore nowadays.
Yeah, you really don't. No,
I was watching don't ask me why I was watching it, but I'll tell you why. It's because someone brought it up. They were talking to baseball at work, and they were like, oh, did you catch out that Field of Dreams game? And I'm all like, no, but I love that movie. I need to watch it. And I watched it the other day, and I swear I was bawling my eyes out. I was like, a father son movie, this is such a good movie.
Even still, like Finding Nemo, like I just get choked up at that movie, you know. And I don't really get choked up at Darth and Luke, but at the same time, that element makes that story very, very compelling. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Something about it.
Yeah.
Well, we could go on forever. I still have so many questions. We could talk about different types of stories. We could talk about publishing, how to publish your stories. I mean, there's just so much more for a later conversation. But any last thoughts about what we've kind of been talking about for the last almost hour?
The only thing I would say is if your listeners are remotely interested in telling stories of their own, which I highly advise anybody to, you may realize that you love it without even knowing it before you start. But what I would say is what I just said a little bit ago, don't throw anything away. Don't discard an idea thinking that it's too ridiculous or it's too overdone or whatever, because you never know, 25 years down the road, you might stumble across it and think, you know what, let's lose a three-legged cow and it could be a pretty good story, you know. Just anything you have. I mean, if it's coming out of your brain and you think that you're remotely creative, then maybe there's value in it, and just jot it down. Who knows, maybe you never use it, but what if, you know. So I would just advise you, don't toss anything.
yeah yeah There really is something about a great story, great writing, great character development, making us relate with the characters and the story. We live every day hearing stories, whether it be in a movie, reading a book, talking in a conversation, or even when we are surfing online on TikToks or whatever. It's truly a special thing. So thank you so much for being on the show, Josh. I really appreciate it. It was a fantastic conversation.
Thank you so much. I loved it. And anytime you want me to ramble, I'm happy to.
Well, I'll take you up on that.
All right.
But and thank you for listening, you listeners out there. If you haven't followed me on Facebook, go check me out there. Also, go back and listen to an episode you haven't listened to yet. This is your reminder if you've been wanting to listen to an episode but you haven't had the chance to do it yet. So thanks for listening. Stay safe out there, and remember.